Hello, I'm Lori McGinley with Kaiser Health News. Thank you for joining us for Health on the Hill, our weekly discussion of healthcare policy and politics. With us today are Mary Agnes Carey from Kaiser Health News and Julie Rovner with National Public Radio. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
Well, Mary Agnes, let's start with you. Congress is back, and it's facing a possible showdown over legislation that is designed to block a 21% cut in physician payments under Medicare. Could you tell us a little bit about that and where we're headed on this?
Right. This effort to block the cut is part of a bigger bill that would extend COBRA benefits for unemployed workers to help them with their health insurance and also unemployment insurance. Democrats are arguing this is emergency spending. It doesn't have to be fully offset, and it would prevent this cut in Medicare physician payments until the end of the month. Now, the cut went into effect on the 1st of April, but the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, also known as CMS, has been holding those claims at the desk. So Democrats hope they can move on this bill, but it's unclear because it isn't fully financed. Again, Democrats say it's emergency spending. Republicans say it needs to be offset. So that's where the showdown's going to come.
Julie, this seems like a hardy perennial, or even more than perennially. Tell us a little bit about this problem. Why is it that we're constantly hearing about this Medicare physician doc cut problem?
Well, it's a problem that actually dates back to 1997, when there was actually a bipartisan bill that balanced the budget. But they set up this formula that for the first couple of years actually overpaid doctors, but since 2001 has been requiring cuts in physician fees under Medicare. And the first year they let the cuts go into effect. And then ever since then, Congress has been basically erasing the cuts. Now, for the first several years, when Republicans were, in fact, in charge, they didn't pay for the cuts. And every year it made it more expensive to actually offset them. And now we've gotten to the situation where actually to make the cuts go away would cost hundreds of billions of dollars, which neither side really wants to be able to come up with, neither Republicans or Democrats wants to come up with. That's the main reason it wasn't part of the health law that just went into effect, because that would have been an extra really $250 billion or so that would have added to the tab of how much that law costs. So they left this out to be resolved later. So now we've gotten to the point where there's this 21% cut that neither Republicans nor Democrats say is tenable, that nobody wants to cut physician pay by 21% because doctors will simply stop taking Medicare patients. But no one really knows how to pay for it. Democrats are saying we shouldn't pay for it at all. This was really a mistake that goes back now, 13 years. We should just call it even and start over again. And in the House, they've actually gotten fiscal conservatives to go along with that. But in the Senate, actually, even some of the fiscally conservative Democrats say, no, we really should pay for it. So it's just a matter of where the money is going to come from. So we've been doing this a month at a time. The House passed a bill that would extend the really sort of the moratorium on these cuts until October, but the Senate hasn't been able to get that through. So now we've got this, sort of cliffhangers every month about how will we do this or will we do this. And in the meantime, you've got doctors wondering if they're going to get paid or how much they're going to get paid, and it's a real problem.
Are we going to face this all year, month by month?
It certainly looks that way. Eventually Congress is going to have to come to grips and deal with this problem. You cannot expect doctors to continue to treat Medicare patients if they don't know when or how much they're going to get paid.
Mary Agnes, you mentioned the COBRA subsidies. Now, that's a very important issue to many, many people. Could you explain a little bit about it and how that fits into this current battle?
Well, if you lose your job and you lose your health insurance, that's a big problem. And so COBRA allows you to extend it, but it's a very expensive program for a lot of people to pay that COBRA benefit. And so that has been in place for a while to give additional money to help people cover their health insurance. And, of course, if those subsidies stop, then you're going to have more uninsured people, which no one really wants.
You reported this week that consumers are just dying for information about this new law that is so mind-boggling in its complexity.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about what questions consumers are asking, who they're asking, and what some of the groups and government agencies are doing to try to take care of that demand.
Sure. The Department of Health and Human Services has been having weekly web chats. They had their second in a series last week. Before the session, the web web session started, they had something like 700 questions that came in. They were a lot of, you would expect, of course, a lot of things geared to Medicare. I'm on Medicare Advantage. How will this affect me? Will I be able to get a physical every year now as a Medicare beneficiary? All those sorts of things. People want to know how it affects them. Other groups, AARP, for example, Families USA, have set up their own information centers. There's a lot of interest in the immediate benefits, the high-risk pool for coverage if you've lost your health insurance, or how do you keep your adult child up to age 26 on your health insurance policy. The regulations for these are now being written, and as more of that becomes clear from the federal government, then more will become clear to these groups and to the public. But there's just a lot of interest in the immediate benefits and the long-term benefits, and people are going everywhere they can to get information.
Julie, do you get the impression that the Department of Health and Human Services is able to answer all these questions? Do they have the structure set up at this point, or is that still some time away?
Well, a lot of questions, there are no answers yet. As Mary mm-hmm. Agnes said, there are regulations that need to be written. I think at this point, it's, you know, they're very basic questions to answer. You know, when do things take effect? Some things take effect in 3 months. Some things take effect in 6 months. Some things take effect in 2014. So a lot of things can be answered fairly simply. A lot of things, though, a lot of questions that people really want to know, as I mentioned, will not be answered until there are regulations. You know, but there's still a lot of misinformation that's out there. Some of it is just mistaken. Some of it is being put out, you know, purposely by critics of the new law. So I think the department is doing, you know, a pretty good job at being very proactive, getting out there, doing these web chats, doing conference calls. You know, one big problem, of course, is that there is still no administrator for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. We now have a name, Don Burr. That's been leaked by the administration, but he's still not been even officially nominated. So he'll need to be nominated, and there'll need to be hearings, and that will be probably a fairly...
When do you think that'll move ahead?
I would assume in the next couple of months. We knew that they weren't going to nominate anyone until the bill became law, because there would be no way. That's such an important post. This is basically $750 billion that person is in charge of. They knew they couldn't get anyone through during the fight over the bill. So they knew that until that was over one way or the other, they couldn't even nominate anyone. Now that that is through, they need to get someone in place. But I expect that to be a fairly, you know, heated confirmation battle, because you'll be able to refight some of the fights over the law, and certainly how it will be implemented. So I expect, you know, now that we know who it will be, that he'll be named in the next, you know, certainly week or two, and then however long it takes for that confirmation battle. But remember, in the Senate, the Republicans who are angry still and trying to stop many nominees, I imagine he'll be, you know, at the top of the list that someone will try to stop.
As the administration moves forward in trying to explain the new law, what lessons do you think people have learned or learned from the experience of the Bush administration had in explaining the Medicare Part D drug benefit that I know both of you were very involved in covering? Some of that went well, some of it didn't go well. Do you think that they're incorporating some of those, the Obama administration is incorporating some of the lessons in what they're doing?
Well, I think they did a really good job in terms of their public campaign, their public awareness campaign. They used the Surgeon General. They used the head of the Food and Drug Administration. Actually, they were chastised for sort of over-politicizing it, but they really did an excellent job at getting around the country, at really
the
helping people
tour.
Understand. Right, yes. They did a really very good job at answering questions. I think where they kind of fell down, and I don't think you can really blame anybody, you know, for doing this. It was a very difficult job to get that up and running with so many private plans, you know, on one day to turn over everybody's, you know, prescription drug, the way people got prescription drugs, and there were obviously going to be flaws, and there were. I don't think you can really blame that on the administration. I think they did about as good a job as one could do. I mean, I think if this administration can do as good a job as the Bush administration did with Part D, they'll probably, can consider that a job well done. But I think in terms of the public relations job that they did with Part D, that would be something that they would probably want to go back and emulate.
Mary Agnes, it's interesting that HHS Secretary Kathleen Sebelius, who by her own account was not a major factor in the negotiations over the health care law, is now one of the most important people in Washington. She has definitely moved to the forefront
right.
In trying to implement this law. She's everywhere.
She is.
What do you think about her change in status and position?
Well, I think she's kind of a great saleswoman in chief, if you can give her that title. I mean, she's out. She's very clear when she speaks. She's eloquent. She's got a lot of experience in her home state of Kansas. And she's out there and she's talking in very clear terms to people about the health care bill and what it means for them. And so I think that they'll continue to use her as much as they can. She's certainly playing a big role in these weekly web chats. And I think you'll just see, we've seen a lot of public appearances so far. She's made it very clear. If you have questions, we'll have answers. I think she'll be at the forefront of this education campaign.
You know, she's not only a former governor, she was a former insurance commissioner in Kansas. Right. So she really understands this stuff at a granular level, and she's really able to explain it in very clear terms. And I think that really helps.
Julie, what was your take on another recent development, which was Bart Stupak's decision to retire, the Democrat from Michigan who was so involved in trying to get stringent anti-abortion clauses into the law?
Well, poor Bart Stupak really got it coming and going when he got the language, the very strict abortion language in the bill when it left the House, became a hero to the anti-abortion movement and, you know, kind of the goat to the abortion rights movement. And when the bill came back to the House, of course, he really wanted to vote for the bill. When he ran in 1992, health care was one of the main points of his platform. He wanted health care for all. He was one of those true anti-abortion Democrats, you know, and I put as much emphasis on the anti-abortion as the Democrat part. So he really wanted there to be a health care bill, but he really wanted to keep to his, you know, anti-abortion pledge. And in the end, remember that the bill as it came out of the Senate was strong enough on the anti-abortion language to win the votes of people like Ben Nelson of Nebraska. So even though there were anti-abortion groups who say that it wasn't very strong, it was strong enough to have the opposition of most of the you know, abortion rights groups, too. So this wasn't so much of a big sellout, and what Bart Stupak and his band of anti-abortion Democrats in the House were able to win was that they would take the Senate bill, mostly because they knew they couldn't change it. There was no way structurally to get it changed, and they got President Obama basically to promise through an executive order that he wouldn't interpret it to allow any further abortion funding. And remember, the going in, the object of this whole thing was to keep the status quo, to not extend any more abortion restrictions and not extend any fewer abortion restrictions. So basically, from what the anti-abortion groups had said going in, they got what they wanted. But for some reason, the anti-abortion groups decided that this was a loss, and they branded Stupak a traitor to the cause. So now he not only is being opposed by the abortion rights groups, he's being opposed from his own flank by abortion opponents, and he's getting hate mail and hate calls and threatening calls from the anti-abortion cause, and he's got looking at a primary challenge from an abortion rights Democrat. And I think after 18 years, he said he just finally had enough. Yeah, he's got this vast, huge district in northern Michigan, the entire Upper Peninsula, you know, 600 miles back and forth. It takes him 8 hours to get home. And, you know, he said he just finally had enough. He'd gotten this bill through, the health bill. He got to vote for it, which was important to him. And, you know, I'm taking him at his word when he says that it was enough of the fight.
Well, Julie, thank you very much. Mary Agnes, thank you very much.
Sure.
This has been Health on the Hill. Thank you for joining us. I'm Lori McGinley with Kaiser Health News.